Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
Back in February of 1972, more than 100 million gallons of toxic liquid waste from coal mining operations broke through a dam in West Virginia's Logan County and rushed down Buffalo Creek.
And I took off running for the car and warned the people down the creek as I went that the water was coming. They wouldn't believe me, and I told them, I said, well, look out there, you can see the house coming down the creek. But still, they didn't believe. And there was many lives lost. But this is the most tragic thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm sorry that God let me live to see it.
The black water tore through the Buffalo Creek Ravine, killing 127 people, injuring more than 1,000, and destroying more than 500 homes. Out of the Buffalo Creek disaster came improved standards and oversight of what are known as coal slurry impoundments. But safety and environmental concerns persist to this day. There are still roughly 150 of these toxic lagoons in the region, many of them associated with what are known as mountaintop removal coal mines. Folks in the tiny West Virginia community of Marsh Fork are especially concerned about a massive coal slurry impoundment. If the dam should break, it would almost instantly flood the local elementary school. Living on Earth's Jeff Young traveled to Marsh Fork for the latest story in our series, Generating Controversy, The Changing Climate of Coal.
For a grandpa, Ed Wiley can cover a lot of ground. I can barely keep his wiry frame and camouflage cap in view as we hoof up a ridge near his home. He has mercy and stops for a swig of water.
I'm winded too.
You're just saying that to make me feel good. A thrush and cardinal sing in the oak and hickories. May apples and fiddlehead curls of fern hide our boots. Wiley walks these woods a lot, looking for bear or turkey, mushrooms or ginseng, or sometimes just peace of mind.
I feel protected here, and it don't happen every time, but usually when I'm alone, but you get the presence of the Lord, you know, touching down on you, and I don't get it nowhere else, you know.
He won't find the Lord or bear or anything else here much longer. This mountaintop and everything on it is being removed in the search for coal.
They're just leveling our mountains in here. They're just literally leveling them with the type of mining they're doing.
We crest the ridge, the wind picks up, and the land simply falls away. A crumbling man-made cliff called a high wall drops to a rock and dirt pit hundreds of yards across. On the far side, another cut reveals seams of coal between layers of rock. The top of that hill is scalped of trees.
I would say by the middle of summer, that mountain there will be gone. It'll all be gone. The ridge that you're walking on is going to be gone too.
And down below all this is where your granddaughter went to school.
Right, yeah, it's less than a half mile from where we're standing here.
Wiley's granddaughter Kayla was a student at Marsh Fork Elementary, just beside this mine's coal preparation plant. Just beyond that is a 350-foot-tall dam built from the rock and earth remains of these hills. The dam holds back a lagoon of semi-liquid waste left over from washing the coal.
And when you got 2.8 billion gallons of toxic sludge sitting over an elementary school, it's not good. It's sad. It's very, very sad what's happened here. The best way I could say it is it looks like to me a bunch of maggots eating away at our mountainsides. And we have them all around us here. If you get it in an airplane, the farther you look, the more you'll see.
I take Wiley's advice and get an aerial view thanks to Sue Lapis, a volunteer pilot with a conservation group called South Wings. We fly from Charleston, the state capital, over forested hills like ocean waves. When we reach mining country, those hills look more like flat-topped mesas. One after another has been blown apart. Lapis points out a dragline crane higher than a 10-story building. Trucks with tires as tall as men dump rock and earth into valleys below.
So all they have to do is keep blasting and keep harvesting coal until the mountain is gone. What a nasty way to get electricity.
Coal provides about half the country's electricity, and Appalachia provides more than one-third of the country's coal. A government study found that at least 800 square miles of mountaintop have been removed, and some 1,200 miles of streams polluted or completely buried by mine waste. At this rate, mountaintop removal will affect nearly 1.5 million acres, an area the size of Delaware, by the end of this decade. Lapis dips a wing to circle the mine above Marsh Fork. The school looks like a tiny box, the waste lagoon a bruise on the raw earth.
My view as a pilot is to look up into this amazing destruction that's above the school. And there's a gigantic slurry dam impoundment right there. An amazing juxtaposition of children and environmental catastrophe. What are they thinking?
Not long ago, Ed Wiley didn't give much thought to any of this. He used to work on the mine with a contracting company, getting good money and, for the first time in his life, health insurance. Then his granddaughter started getting sick at school, pale with headaches and fatigue. When he took her home early from school for the third time, he noticed what seemed like a lot of names on the student sign-out book, a lot of kids going home sick. He buckled Kayla into the seat of his pickup.
And she turns and looks at you, and tears are pouring down this little girl's eyes. And she says, "Gramps, these coal mines are making us kids sick." That hurt. That hurt me. You know, it took her tears to wake me up, and it was like a sledgehammer.
It's still not clear what might be making school kids sick. An independent air test found coal dust in the school, but other government tests found nothing that could account for illnesses. Wiley thinks it has to do with the blasting and dust and the hazardous warning labels on chemicals he'd seen at the mine and its prep plant. And then there's the dam. Wiley heard troubling stories from workers about its construction and safety violations against the company. He thought of all the rainwater that will run from the mined land, adding pressure on the dam during storms. He saw it all pointing to trouble for the little school. Like nearly everything else here, Marsh Fork Elementary sits on the scarce flat land between the main road and the creek in the narrow valley carved by a branch of the Coal River. Looming above the school is the silo of the coal company's preparation plant. Coal is washed with a chemical bath to remove impurities and stored in the silo. Then it's sprayed with more chemicals to keep it from freezing in winter, to keep it in place on train cars. This happens less than 300 feet from where these children play.
What can I say? I mean, it's the major source of industry. I mean, it's the major source of jobs. Without the coal mining, nothing functions around here.
Dennis Dye teaches physical education at Marsh Fork. Dye says air quality tests and a visit to the mine convinced him that Wiley's safety concerns are overblown.
I guess there can never be a guarantee that a slurry impoundment won't fail. But I've been up there, and there'll be a lot of other things fail in this state before that impoundment fails.
The main fear from staff is that the controversy about the mine will end up closing the school. Principal Louise Mollahan Maynard would much rather be bragging about her students going to a state math fair than talking about safety issues with a reporter.
Probably the thing that bothers me the most is the outsiders. And I think we have a lot of outside influences that are causing us a lot of problems.
That mine is enormous, and the impoundment is enormous. In the past, those things have failed. Doesn't that bother you?
I was raised in a coal mining town. My father was a coal miner. And you get used to some things when you live in this area, just like people do who live in the steel, around steel plants or whatever the circumstances are. And I pray that nothing ever goes wrong, but there's no guarantee of that with anything. And we're all brought into this world, and the minute we come into this world, then we begin on the process of going out of this world. We're all going to die of something, whether it's old age, natural cause, falling off our front porch, a flood. We're all going to leave this earth some way.
Federal law clearly forbids coal mining within 300 feet of a school. But Randy Huffman of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection explains this mine and this school predate the law.
It was there before mining was regulated. And when the law was passed to regulate mining, it was grandfathered.
That was 1977. The mine then was nothing like the one today. Then it was an underground mine, and it was not owned by Massey Energy, the nation's fourth largest coal producer. Even in an industry where safety and environmental problems are common, Massey's record stands out. This month, the federal government sued Massey for more than 4,000 violations of the Clean Water Act, possibly more than $1.5 billion in fines. Massey also faces a federal criminal investigation and record safety fines for a fire last year that killed two workers. And in 2000, Massey's Martin County mine in Kentucky was the scene of what federal officials called the worst environmental disaster in Southeast U.S. history. The mine's slurry impoundment failed, blackening 60 miles of waterways. Yet Huffman declines to say that Massey's impoundment at Marsh Fork warrants extra attention.
I don't make judgments about who we should trust and who we shouldn't. We're tasked with enforcing the law based upon certain parameters and permit requirements. I do feel that the children are safe from the impoundment breaking through. You know, to the degree that that helps anybody feel better, I'm confident that the children are safe.
Huffman's agency is trying to stop Massey from building a second coal silo at Marsh Fork, this one even closer to the school. The matter is under appeal. Massey representatives did not respond to several interview requests for this story. During the Clinton administration, David McAteer directed the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration, the country's top coal safety watchdog. McAteer is now a vice president for Wheeling Jesuit University, where he compiled a comprehensive database of coal impoundment safety, all the failures, slurry spills, and other incidents.
The Massey Company has a higher rate of failure slash incidents than any other company that operates impoundments in the country. Those are the facts.
McAteer says he sees no evidence of imminent danger of failure at the Marsh Fork impoundment. But he remembers the tragedy at Buffalo Creek, and he knows that dams of this nature are 10 times more likely to fail than the concrete dams most people are familiar with.
It just isn't logical and I don't think it's very responsible to put an impoundment and a school in proximity to one another. Failures are rare, but failures do exist. And so why do we put the children in harm's way? It makes common sense. It's logical to take the children out of harm's way, and that makes the most sense to me.
That makes sense to Ed Wiley, too. He organized Pennies of Promise, a campaign to raise money to move the school to a safer place. It's been difficult, he says.
So it's hard to get people that's dependent on this for work, their livelihood, to speak out. And it's a tough issue. I feel this is willfully and knowingly leaving these kids in harm's way. This is a form of child abuse and at its highest level.
Wiley took his concerns to West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin. Manchin ordered some health testing at the school and fought Massey's attempt to build a second coal silo at Marsh Fork. But time dragged on with no commitment from the governor for a new school. So Wiley joined a group of demonstrators and occupied the governor's office at the Capitol.
What do you want? What do you want, Laura?
A new school in Marsh Fork Community!
Manchin had state troopers haul the demonstrators away. Wiley contacted his congressman, Democrat Nick Rahal. Rahal chairs the powerful House Committee on Natural Resources and is a strong supporter of coal.
Yes, coal provides a livelihood to a vast number of people in my district and in West Virginia. Yes, coal's a friend to West Virginia.
Rahal helped write surface mining law 30 years ago. It allows mountaintop removal mining, but requires that the reclaimed mine sites be put to good use.
It happens to be in some parts of our country, like in southern West Virginia, flatlands is a premium. And where we have the mountaintop mining done in a responsible manner, we have very good public works projects on top of those sites. So it's not like you're just whacking down the mountains and you're doing it in an irresponsible fashion.
After years of requests to state and federal officials, Ed Wiley had run out of patience, but not out of energy. He put a Pennies of Promise banner over his shoulder and put his boots on the road, and he walked all the way to Washington, D.C. Supporters cheered him along the last steps of his 450-mile, 40-day hike to Capitol Hill.
These kids deserve a chance. Just because they're in the coal fields, we'll not be belittled no more. We'll not be beaten down no more. All the children in the Appalachian Mountains need a safe, healthy environment to go to school in.
In the months since Wiley's long walk, mountaintop removal mining opponents won an important court victory. The federal court decision could force more thorough environmental review before mines receive federal permits. Congress is considering clean water legislation that would limit the waste, rock, and dirt dumped into streams. Wiley raised some money and gained some allies for his campaign, but the school has not moved. The children of Marsh Fork still get their lessons in the shadow of coal. For Living on Earth, I'm Jeff Young in Marsh Fork, West Virginia.
Coming up, a country singer returns to her coal country roots. That's just ahead on Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.